And the one advice that I did not receive from anyone, I think the only person that I received it from was my mother. And it was just take care of yourself. Sleep, eat, and then prepare for your presentation. Don't try to make it the best till the very last minute in the expense of your sleep, because that will make your immune system fall apart and you'll be very, very weak because of the stress. Across the room.
Welcome. You're listening to the Designers FM show, where we serve you the stories of designers from all over and talk about the things that move them. I'm your host, David, welcoming you from Amsterdam, where Dutch summer is in full motion, or it's raining. Today, we welcome a senior product designer, public speaker, illustrator, and motion designer who speaks three languages and is currently living in Sofia, Bulgaria, and working at Falcon.io. Welcome, Svetlana Lazarova. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
Almost, yeah.
Almost. It's a practice, right? How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me here.
So we always start with a small icebreaker question to make a little bit more fun and to break the ice. So for today, it's you can have an unlimited supply of one thing for the rest of your life. What would it be?
I want to give a sophisticated and deep answer, but honestly, the only thing that I would ever need unlimited supply of is probably coffee. So just because it's my power source, I would never, ever be able to go without it. So
coffee,
definitely.
Yeah. How many coffee do you drink every day? Do you have like a certain ritual?
I drink one immediately after I wake up. After that, when I start working, and I am trying recently, I started trying to get only up to 3 cups per day, because otherwise I start shaking by the end of the day. But while we were back at the office, I usually had around 4 or 5, which is very unhealthy, and I don't recommend it to anyone. Drink coffee, but the right amount.
Do you also have, like, what other people, coffee consumption goes up as they have more meetings? I mean, in the office, maybe not.
Definitely. Because during meetings, especially the ones that you really shouldn't be part of, it's very, very, very hard to keep focused and to be interested in and to be awake. So as the meetings go up, the coffee also goes up. So
yeah, unfortunately. I see a lot of people now drastically having less and less coffee because they're in less and less meetings, which I think is a good thing. So we, after the icebreaker question, we have 8 quick questions. This first one I'll start with is iOS or Android?
It's iOS.
iOS. And what do you think about Android? Have you ever used it? Have you switched? Have you switched back maybe?
I don't need to think about it because I am so deep in the ecosystem that it doesn't make sense for me to think about Android unless I am actually designing for it. But Android, I used to have an Android phone. I think everybody did. It still feels to me like the old school thing that you start with. And once you transition to iOS, you can never, ever go back to that, because it's not very pleasing and it's very badly designed and in general has not the greatest user flow. I also have to mention that I'm very, very, very biased and my opinion should not be taken in consideration because I am completely and entirely part of the ecosystem, and I know that's the case. That's the goal of Apple, because once you get in, you're trapped and it makes no sense to go away. But I like it and I wouldn't change it. It's very neat and very, very comfortable. Because, for example, as I told you earlier, I use my iPad as second monitor, and the most time saver feature that I found out is copying something from my iPhone and pasting it on my MacBook. So I'm so deeply nested within the ecosystem, so that it has to be like a major outbreak for Android so I can consider a change.
Yeah, I think I have the exact same. Like the ease of use, like I've switched to Android once. Don't ask me why, but it was during, I think, Samsung S7. And at some point you just realize, like, how do you get stuff from your MacBook to your phone. That's something you don't think about when you're on like the Apple ecosystem. So yeah, I'm not going to leave anymore. Also because I'm too invested now in all the Apple stuff. Question two, what social networks do you use and what do you use them for?
Almost all of them, unfortunately. But I'm very cautious of how I spend my time on them. For example, I'm actively trying to set up my feeds in a way that they bring the best value for me. My Facebook has only art pages that are being followed. I rarely see people updates besides from my close friends, and it's almost entirely art and design pages, news and music. I do have an Instagram profile. I actually have two. One is Instagram for Business because I recently created an account just for my illustration work. And I see so much value in it because it has this analytics tool to it attached, and you can see who your posts have reached through and how many people are actually even looking at your photos or illustrations or whatever you're uploading, what's your target, when your audience is active, and so on. So Instagram has a lot of benefits, and I am probably never ever leaving it. I'm also on LinkedIn. That's very beneficial. And I use Twitter sometimes, not a lot, because even though, again, my Twitter feed is also set up in this specific way of following only design-related news and so on, Twitter has this inescapable feature that is turning everything political. And especially with what's going on right now, it's very toxic and unhealthy place to have a profile on Twitter, even though they discuss like matter of politics and everything that's crazy in the world right now. And it's good to be familiar with those things, and they're close to my heart. At one point, it just gets too much, and I tend to run away from Twitter.
Yeah, I agree. I think Pedro mentioned last time that he's in love with muting and blocking people on Twitter because it makes it doable for him to, during the week, not spend time on politics, Brazilian politics for him. And then during the weekend, he does the reverse and he blocks all design and product related stuff so he can actually focus on. But it's too much work. I mean, you just want to open up your social media and like see the things that matter to you at that time. And it just feels too much work to be blocking and muting all the time. Cool. Question three, when you think of great design, what's the first physical product that you think of?
Although very simple, I always think of a whiteboard because I'm a very chaotic person. And on a daily basis, I have too much things that I have to take care of in my work. So it really, at one point, it gets crazy. And if I don't figure something out fast, it gets even crazier. So it always comes down to just having a whiteboard so I can quickly sketch something or write down something, or just if in general I need to create any sort of user flow charts, I have my whiteboard.
And do you have one in your home office now that you have, that you're working from home?
Don't ask me that because I don't. And it's very, very uncomfortable when I have to get one.
Yeah. I think like a lot of people I've spoken to during this working from home phase have said it would be so nice to have a whiteboard at home, but it's also a pretty ugly product to put in your living room or even in your home office because it's a whiteboard, right?
Yeah, it definitely breaks my designer's eye or whatever you want to call it. It's unpleasant to look at, but very, very useful. So I'm considering getting just a small one that I can put somewhere on my desk and not really notice that much.
Yeah. Do you use the iPad for this kind of stuff more now that you're at home? Like note-taking and scribbling and...
Not really. I use my iPad. Have you heard of the app Procreate?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I just use it for Procreate, and basically I use it for illustration and drawings. I don't consider it that useful in the aspect of taking notes, even though I know it is. I just never got used to doing it on my iPad. And if I have to take notes very quickly, I would do it with pen and paper instead of my iPad.
Although the 12.9-inch is pretty big, I still think the surface is not big enough to... you can pinch and zoom and make the artboard as big as you want, but you just want to have like a big surface where you can go all around, I think.
Yeah.
Again, think great design. What's the first digital product that you think of?
Can I name three?
Yes, of course.
I'll be very quick in that. First one is Miro, because it's basically a whiteboard, but digital one. So I need that in my daily struggles. The second one is Evernote. I use that for taking notes. And having Miro and Evernote together, as I said, I'm a very chaotic person, but those two products really balance me. And in addition to that, it's just Spotify, because, you know, it's Spotify.
You need music. Do you think that Miro or Miro or whatever they want to call them, I don't know, we'll have to ask them maybe next time. Do you think they're doing the same for like whiteboard collaboration in a nutshell that Figma does for design? That they're bringing teams together more? How do you experience it at work when you're using it?
Definitely. The most pleasant feature to be able to collaborate with each other within a single Miro board. We recently had a workshop with my team to just compare a few designs, but also each of us had 10 minutes, and you can actually put a timer within Miro or whatever we call it. You can put a timer. So we had timers and task list, and we quickly sketched everything that we wanted, and it was all collaborative work, and it was very, very neat to have that experience. And I think that's the whole base of Miro. It's not only a whiteboarding tool, but it's like whiteboarding tool on drugs, something like that.
Yeah, good drugs. Do you think that, I was thinking about this, because always when I've organized workshops, especially with people that are not really comfortable drawing and sketching, you have this, oh shit, I need to start sketching now. What if my drawings are shit and stuff? Do you think that's become less because you're behind like a screen with products like Miro or Miro?
Not necessarily for everyone, unfortunately, because people still tend to panic about the fact that they have a certain amount of time and their work would be immediately visible to everyone. And just, I think it comes down to personality and some sort of character, whether you're okay with people seeing your work in progress and how open you are to feedback or how open you are to just making mistakes in general. And people are afraid of that.
So number five, describe the work environment of your dreams. So it already includes a whiteboard. That's one. How would you describe the rest?
To me, work environment really means work culture, because it's really my highest of priorities. I honestly don't care that much about the office itself. If I have everything I need for my job, I'm not the biggest fan of open space office type of offices. I think no one really is. I'm also fine with co-working spaces, and I used to be fine with working from home. I am no longer because of the whole COVID situation, but in general, to me, when it comes down to work environment, it usually means my colleagues and my teams. And if I have that, if the company that I work for has this very well-established culture and morals, it's close enough to the environment of my dreams, just because it's very hard to find.
So just, it's basically the people that are the most important thing, and then the rest will follow, right? If the people are right, culture is right. Cool. What time of day are you most productive? Is there a difference? And has this changed over time?
Not really. It's kind of weird. I am the most productive when it's very quiet. So it's usually very, very early in the morning or very, very late at night.
But given that you are most productive when it's quiet, doesn't that mean that you have more quiet in your home office than in an actual office?
That's true. I used to prefer working from home at least one day per week, just so I can concentrate and get my thoughts straight and just do my job. But at one point, I think it gets too quiet and you need some sort of distraction, not necessarily distraction, but just white noise to keep you concentrated. And to me, I used to be the most productive while I was working at home. Right now, I am still very productive when it's early morning or very, very late at night, depending on what I am doing. But it no longer suits me to have a whole day of quiet time and just time for myself.
it's just a little bit too much, I think, right? It's like a balance of having a little bit of noise around you, but also quiet. Mm-hmm. Cool. That leads me to the final question of the 8 quick questions. Who had the most influence on you as a designer? Which person?
No one really. I kind of figured it out on my own, and I had no hand to hold. I do remember that when I was 13, I had a friend or just acquaintance of mine that told me about that this thing, the graphic design, that it's very cool. And that pretty much made me start to research and get involved into the whole how can I become a designer one day kind of thing. But in general, I wish I was lucky enough to have someone to influence me. But yeah, it also made me be a lot more eager to learn. And even though it gave me lots of sleepless nights, it's worth it.
Does this mean, like, in general, that you're more the kind of person that likes to explore and learn on her own than being told something by someone and then just take that as a lesson?
It really, really depends on how I am told the thing that I need to learn about. So if it's just, hey, why don't you check out this tool? Why don't you check out this method of doing things better? I would definitely listen and research it. And if someone just sends me a link and shares something interesting or some interesting article with me, I would definitely be eager to learn and see what it is. But in general, I'm usually doing the research on my own, and I'm trying to keep up with the new things on my own just because I'm so used to it. And it's just right now part of my personality at this point.
I mean, if it suits you well, then why change it, right?
Yeah.
Cool. That is a nice segue, I think, into like the first part of your life or the journey of your life into a design career. So you're from Bulgaria. You also grew up in Sofia or in another city in Bulgaria?
I grew up in Varna. That's the so-called sea capital of Bulgaria.
And could you describe a little bit like how your childhood was, where you grew up, family, social activities, that sort of stuff?
Mm-hmm. My hometown was in Stiwis, a lovely place. I do like it still very much, and I used to visit it from time to time. I had somewhat happy childhood because it's very different here. It's very different to grow up in this post-communism reality, and I was not born in a wealthy family, which to this day, with the corrupt country Bulgaria is, hasn't changed much. That's why the moment I turned 18, I knew that I had to leave Bulgaria so I can be more and become more.
And you mentioned already a little bit that there was this person who said, hey, you should check out design and you should really get into it. Could you tell me a little bit more about when this was and what kind of period that was in your life when you started getting into design?
That was very, very long ago. I think I was 12 or something like that. And the thing is that I've been drawing my whole life, and from like 6-year-old. And unfortunately, I was well aware that you can't really do much or be very wealthy as an artist, unfortunately. And I knew I wanted to do something with art. And luckily, I found this thing, the design, and basically got more and more involved into it.
And you already mentioned a little bit about growing up in post-communism and that there weren't a lot of possibilities in Bulgaria. Does this mean that in Bulgaria there aren't any like classes or universities that you could go to, or that they're just not that that good at giving arts and design?
A little bit of both. Don't get me wrong, our country is great. It has its flaws, but it definitely lacks a lot in terms of education and a few other things. But let's focus on education now. What I wanted to study was not available in any university in Bulgaria, or what was available was so outdated in terms of how the programs were set that it didn't really make sense to even start there. And it would have been a waste of time and money. That's why I chose Denmark for education and just pursuing this design career.
Were there other countries and cities that you had to pick from and Denmark was the winner, or was Denmark just the only one you wanted to go to?
It really wasn't. It was one of my least favorite options, but the one that made the most sense. I really wanted to go to the United Kingdom, but the education there is set in such way that you have to pay a huge amount of money and be in a huge debt once you have that specific amount of money per year. And I really wanted to get away from paying for my education throughout my whole life. That's why I decided to go in Denmark. Also, I read a lot about the fact that, first of all, it's very open to foreigners. It's very open to people from Eastern Europe even. And people there in general are very, very diverse. And it has this culture of acceptance.
And this was Copenhagen?
No. I think that's the exact reason why I left Denmark. I lived in Aalborg. That's, again, a city that's very close to the sea. It's very cold and very windy and very small. And in Denmark, if you do not live in Copenhagen, it sucks, basically. Like, the education was good, but there is not much to do within that city. And there is really not much of career advancement or any sort of opportunities for people who are not Danes.
And you said already, like, the country is really diverse and open for foreigners. Was this also the same for your classes? Were they as diverse as the country itself?
Definitely. Some of my best friends, like one of my best friends is from Lithuania and the other one is from Ecuador. So you can say that it was a very, very diverse class. And we had a lot of diverse teachers even. So it was a really, really welcoming country.
And what kind of things did you learn there that had a big influence on you as a person or as a designer?
Throughout my education in Denmark, nothing really, because they have a very weird approach, and I really appreciate it. I don't want to sound like I'm complaining, but I am a little bit, because they have this sort of system that really works, obviously, but it's very stressful. So you have a few classes. After those classes, you have a huge amount of deadlines, and those deadlines are very close to each other. And you're just a bunch of people with some sort of a direction on what needs to be done. And that's about it. So you have to do your project. You have 1 month. You have no idea how everything works. Well, you have 1 month to figure it out. And that's it. They really tried with giving us guidance, but they didn't succeed every time, which I think is normal. I think it's normal for every sort of educational system. It was just a lot of stress to have that experience immediately after you get away from home and from high school where everything was arranged and from your family. And it was just a bunch of things that overcomplicated everything.
And I think it's also like you go to university, but you also go to university in a different country with probably different rules and a different setup than Bulgaria. That also makes it not the easiest transition, probably.
Mm-hmm. It wasn't really.
No. So from what I could find and what you said previously is that your first jobs in design were during your time in Denmark. Could you tell us a little bit about what kind of jobs that were?
Actually, my first sort of design job was even during high school. I think it was around the end of high school, actually. I made a few logos and a few mockups of landing pages, which, again, at that time, I had no idea what landing page is. So they were very, very bad. But those were the first jobs that actually gave me some sort of money or just allowance to be on my own using my design skills.
Cool. I think that it might mean it must feel liberating in a sense that you can like do things that you love and then pay the bill with it or spend money with things you love. Was this kind of like the same thinking behind the jobs that you got during your college in Denmark?
Not necessarily, because during my education, I had to get this internship. So first I had to find a company that would be willing to have me as an intern. That was one of my jobs during university. And before that, I joined a local startup as their graphic, web, everything, marketing designer, just everything. And they were an event company that really hosted most of the events for foreigners and just young people in general in all work. And those two were the first jobs that I ever got paid for and really helped me not only like pay my bills or just spend money on something else, but just in general, be involved in the design process or just be part of a project or just having to figure it out all on my own.
Did you like to be kind of this designer that has to do everything? Or do you like to be more specialized in one or two aspects of design?
I didn't really like to be part of everything. It's very heavy. And to me, as a concept, it doesn't work to be great at everything. It just doesn't make sense. You can be greatest graphic designer and the greatest illustrator and the greatest product designer. It's just not possible because there is tons of work and tons of research that you have to do on each aspect that it's impossible to be great at everything. So to me, it makes sense to have just one lean direction and follow it.
And then your education ended in Denmark.
Mm-hmm.
Was it clear then that you wanted to make a career out of design, and what path into design that you wanted to take? Did you plan this after your education?
I don't really think so. This is when I understood the value of design. I understood that there is more than just an experience, and I really got involved into the business side of design and just product development in general. But it was still very unclear to me how I wanted to pursue a career in web design in general, because back then we didn't really have this UI UX designer title yet. So it was a new thing that came out right after I graduated in Denmark, and once I did, I had to figure it out, this new thing, whether I like it or not. And it turned out that I did, but it wasn't really a smooth path, or just I had some sort of direction from university. It was just a lot of guessing and researching and running around scared.
I can imagine. But what was your first job after your education?
My first job after I graduated in Denmark, I moved back to Bulgaria for a bit. And I joined this product company that was American product company with sitting in Bulgaria as well. They had an office in Bulgaria, mostly chaotic, but it was a tool about analytics and payments at the same time. It was just crazy. I don't think the product owner even knew what the product was about.
And how was that for you as a designer in such a chaotic environment?
Stressful. And I really tried to get as much as I can from it, but I was still really new into this whole first design world, second just having a stable job in general and be surrounded by teammates. And I had to learn on my own that culture is something essential, and it's not something that each company has or values or even considers, because lots of my teammates were not the best kind of people. I had a weird designer yell at me almost every day. I had no idea what the product was about. I had almost no sort of sense or direction. I just knew that I had to be better at something within my job, within my daily tasks, so I can get something out of this job.
Does feel, or when you describe it, feels like a difficult period to, because it's your first job, right? So if you think that this is like what design is all over the world, then it must feel like maybe I made a mistake going into this area.
It definitely did at that time. I wasn't really sure whether this part of design is for me, whether I should just turn back and go back to graphic design and make cool posters and whatnot. But I just decided to step back a little bit and be completely aware of the choices that I'm making. So the only thing that made sense was to just quit my job and experience something new and try in another company. And maybe if in another company I still find it very chaotic and very unusual or unuseful or nothing close to what I imagined, then maybe it was the time to just make the choice and go for another direction.
What did this mean for you? Something new? What kind of direction did you go in?
It wasn't really change of direction. I got a job in a big Bulgarian corporation. At that time, I joined as their UI UX designer, but not really. I was also taking care most of their graphic design needs, and I had little to almost no product related work. But while I was there and I was focused on graphic design, I managed to get insight into what a UI UX designer was doing. And what I saw really interested me, and this is how I just decided not to quit and pursue a direction in product design.
Must feel like a lot easier than the previous job where you said like there's no like seniority around you where you can learn from. And if you can learn from them, they shout at you. It's like, but this is the difference, right? So you can be in one company and think, well, this whole industry sucks. And then you can be in another company and think that this is the best. Mm-hmm. This is the best part of being a designer. What would you tell to like a younger version of yourself that is about to get into design, having learned those lessons like early in your career? Because you mentioned like last time we spoke that you think that you learned a lot about life in your early career that you think is applicable to a lot of younger designers that are starting now.
I want to mention that it's to me, when I look at myself back then, I just want to tap myself on the shoulder and say, like, you really can make a career out of the fact that you're unhappy with everything and you want to change it. And that is something that you want to pursue. And there is a future in it. And just don't quit. Be patient, and because it's worth it. And really, nothing can compare to the fact that when something was once in your head is now developed and functioning product with users and everything. So it's great. You just push through it, but be careful of the companies that you're joining because there are a lot of shitholes that you don't want to work for.
Would you now, having learned these lessons, like go different about joining a company? How would you try to learn if this company is actually a bad company or a good company?
I'll try to be as granular as possible. And I can easily fit them within three categories. I always look whether the company that I am trying to get in is whether a startup, a service-oriented company, or a product company. So startups, to me, I'll start with them. They're very chaotic, and they're definitely not for everyone. Because if you want to help in building up that company or that particular product, you should have enough patience and be ready to make the effort. But unfortunately, it also comes down to the fact that the management that is within that startup also have to adapt to the growth and what they would do in terms of culture. Because I was, last year, I joined a startup as one of the very, very high management positions, and I had to just run away from it because the senior management really didn't understand the value of culture and just didn't really apply much sense to it and having it to being adaptable to every person who is joining. And it's sad to see. There are a lot of examples like this. For example, you can see that Revolut has a great product and it's the greatest, really, really particular example of how good a product can be. But when you just type in Revolut and everything that you can hear about it is how bad the company culture is. So if you want to join a startup, you really have to take your time to research about it. Then again, we have service-oriented companies, which really usually are big corporations. They want everything done fast and cheap. And it often results in lack of quality in terms of shipping or just poor products and poor product management and treatment of all employees. Yet, I have to say that those are the experiences that I cherish the most because it's such fast-paced environment and you're met with new challenges every day and it shapes you as a person and as a designer. And it gives you tons of new skills that you never knew needed or even had somewhere within you. So I would definitely recommend those even for a short period of time. And in regards to product companies within them, I felt the most comfortable because in general, they have more resources in terms of testing and research, and they definitely have bigger timelines. Also, the culture is not something that's ignored because it affects the team collaboration and team efforts. So usually the management within product companies realize how important that is. But of course, this is just me speaking from my experience. It's probably not the same for every designer.
No, but I think it's great advice to like make this distinction between, because at the end of the day, what you're saying is the type of company also kind of enforces a type of behavior and culture in a company. And that's different for a startup than for a big corporation who is more service oriented. Would you say that just having the three different type companies in your experience is a good way of like starting up your career?
I wish I had it earlier, actually, because I could have done my research better and be aware what the companies that I'm joining are actually what they stand for, and it would have given me a better path to follow, because I never knew that I have to learn everything in a fast-paced environment. So I can become better at skills that I never knew I needed or had within me. And I would definitely save up the stress of being in a startup in a later stage of my career. This is just an example, but I know now that if I had that specific list of how companies are usually structured, I would have done much better. But I had to learn through experience.
I think learn on the job. I think everyone thinks about their career 10 years ago and thinks, well, if I could turn back time, I wouldn't make that mistakes. But I think that's also the process of learning.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of like process, at some point you got hired at Falcon as a senior product designer or as a product designer? Did you get promoted at Falcon or before?
No, I was senior before that.
Could you tell me about the kind of like 6 months before you joined Falcon and how that led to them hiring you?
From everything I already said, I think it's very obvious that I had plenty of bad experiences, and I knew that I wanted to be part of a company that values culture. This is what Falcon is actually famous for, the wonderful work ethic and their wonderful culture. They had an open position and I took my chance. This was also the first company that I ever had a interview that was about culture and team fit. And it really, really impressed me. And I guess it was some sort of mutual impression, because after my last interview, they gave me the offer after 2 hours or something like that. So it was really fast and smooth hiring process.
Match made in heaven with that regard. Could you, for maybe those people that don't know Falcon.io, I think it's a social media management company. Could you tell in a nutshell what it's about?
It's a Danish company that is, as you said, social media management tool, and it offers a variety of products, and by variety I mean 7, within just one platform, from content marketing to customer engagement and advertising and analytics. You have it all. It's huge, has lots of happy customers. I am currently the designer who is responsible for their mobile experience, so we have that in addition to just a desktop management tool, and it's really great.
Could you tell us a little bit more about what your role is? Because you said you work on mobile. Are there many teams at Falcon? How is the company structured a little bit?
Each product, as I said, there are 7 products that fit within one platform. Each product has its own team, its own design team, its own development team. I am responsible for the mobile experience, but the mobile experience means all 7 products at once, just within one mobile experience. And I recently joined also the advertising product as their designer. So I am currently working within mobile and desktop. And the teams are set up pretty, in general, how teams are set up. They have their product owners or product manager. We have our development team. We have our designer team. And each team has its own management or its own structure. Depending on the team, there are some teams that have team leads, but usually those are the teams that are part of the development process. The design team is really, really bits and parts here and there, but we try to fit in within just one team and have separate design tasks that really affect the whole Falcon experience. For example, the design team is responsible for the design system that's built within and for Falcon. So we have that in addition to our daily tasks.
Yeah, because I can imagine having seven different products with a lot of different smaller design teams, that having alignment between the two can be challenging. Mm-hmm. How many designers do you work with on like all those products?
We are a huge team. So on a regular basis, I work with three other designers. In general, we are 12 or 14. I might be lying because we have also a design management team. And the best thing about Falcon is that we have a UX research team. So we usually have people who are helping us during our research process or during our discovery process. And we also consider them part of the design team.
That's really good to have like a UX team instead of design and research separate. Does it mean that you like speak to all the designers in person? Like, have you met all them?
No, we are separated. We are all over the world, actually. As I said, Denmark, I'm sorry. Falcon is situated in Copenhagen. Most of the designers are from there. And we have three designers here in Bulgaria. We have one designer who is currently in Canada. And in general, we're all over the world. I forgot to mention that we also have a platform experience team, which means that we have designers and developers who are just taking care of the design system and the components within them. On a daily basis, it depends on which product I have to work on. Depending on that, I have to collaborate with the designer who is working on the desktop application of that. And we usually have this weekly regular check-ins, and we're doing some jobs on the side, like we have some sort of lightning critique rounds each week, and we try to make the most of it, actually. So I speak to all of the designers, not on a daily basis, but definitely on a weekly basis.
I think that's like valuable that you can speak to everyone like in person, that you don't, because at Booking now, I think there's like almost 300 designers, maybe even more. So talking to everyone is hardly impossible, which makes collaboration harder, because from what I knew from the people that started back when design team was 10, 15 people, they would all get into a room every week or every 2 weeks or every 3 weeks and just collaborate, like align on things. But if you have 300 people, then collaboration, communication becomes a lot harder. There's another thing that you are really passionate about, which is public speaking, which is, I think, where you know James from. So from what I could find, you've spoken at least 7 public events. So when did you figure out, yes, I want to go on stage and talk about my work? When was this?
In regards to the public speaking, I think it was around my first year when I came back in Bulgaria. So it was like my first year pursuing a design career. I attended a design conference, which I honestly don't remember the name of, but it wasn't really the greatest one. And I know that I was part of someone was talking about something that really wasn't very interesting. And I was just sitting there and I was saying to myself and thinking, wait a second, this is really, really badly explained, and I can definitely explain it much better, and I actually know all these stuff, and what am I doing? Basically, this is how everything got into my head in terms of whether I want to be speaking at different events. But honestly, before that, throughout my mission, we have to present each month most of our project work. So that really pushed me to not be afraid of public speaking. But the moment I saw this talk and I was part of that conference, it really got into my head.
I can imagine that the first time you go on stage is not the same as the last time you went on stage in terms of how comfortable you are, or maybe how easy you talk about these things. So could you tell a little bit about your first experience and how you've grown over time after that?
It all started like a few years ago, I think like 4 years ago. I was working at this big Bulgarian corporation. They had this annual conference and asked me to participate as a speaker. Since I had the most design experience within that area and within our team at the moment. So I did. I liked the experience. I was honestly so bad now that I think of it. Of course, because it was my first time on stage. But mainly because I had no idea what I was doing. And also the conference was really not the greatest one in terms of organization. I think from that point on, I started taking better care of my preparation and actually wanted to learn from my mistakes. And it's, I think the hardest part of that process is accepting the fact that you're making a mistake and you're not perfect and you actually have a lot to learn from. And public speaking is not easy. It takes a lot of courage. It takes a lot of skill. It takes a lot of patience and, I don't know, just a healthy lifestyle to not lose your shit on the stage. And you just in general have to learn from your mistakes and be adaptable.
You mentioned that you wanted to learn from the mistakes. Does this mean that you watch your recordings back of when you present on stage and then look like, hey, this is something that could improve next time?
I had one experience like that. So I think this was like my second ever public speaking event attending as a public speaker. And I was prepared. My presentation was on point. I knew what I had to say. But when I went on stage, it was terrible because no one tells you stuff like, hey, watch out what you're doing with your hands and where you put them and what you're actually in general doing. How are you walking? How is your tone of voice? Do you sound excited? Do you involve the public? What's going on in general with you while you're sitting there and people are watching you? So basically, on the recording, it looked like I was in high school and I had to just spill out a bunch of words for this amount of time and it looked terrible. And I watched the recording around 17 times just to note more and more mistakes in my behavior and the way that I'm expressing myself and in general, what am I doing with my body movements and how I stay on stage, whether my tone of voice is exciting as it should be, or am I making people fall asleep?
And does it mean that now you don't watch your recordings back anymore because you've watched so many recordings in the past that you now think like this is over?
No, I still do. Of course I do, because I'm still not perfect at it, of course. I don't think anyone ever is, because it's such a delicate subject and just in general, how you have to go and turn into a completely different person while you're on stage. So I watch every recording that I get and every recording that I have available. Now, when I watch my recordings, there are not a lot of mistakes, not that much mistakes. I always see something that I don't like and I think I can do better next time. But I no longer have to worry whether my tone of voice is exciting or whether I am not moving on stage, whether I don't know what I'm talking about, and whether I, in general, got so anxious about what I'm doing.
You're growing, yeah. Probably, and then you become better. How do you practice things like body language and posture? Like, do you do this at home in front of a mirror or like with a small crowd at work?
Honestly, the first few times I practiced it just in front of my dog, and I was trying to keep my tone of voice interesting. That's how it started. And afterwards, I started before the actual event to rehearse it in front of a few close friends because I know that they'll be honest and say immediately what I'm doing wrong in terms of body posture and the way that I'm speaking, whether it's exciting, whether I keep them involved in my discussion or not. So I usually do that, but I tend to focus most on being prepared and having a great presentation and just in general have my talk next to me and just knowing it, knowing what I have to say, knowing what I have to do, when I have to check whether I have to make it to the next slide or not, or go to the previous one. This is what I'm mostly focused on.
We spoke about your conference a little bit. Are there any experiences you had around or with these conferences that you want to share that made an impact in a positive or negative way?
Sure. Well, in terms of what can be helpful, I have two examples. One we already discussed, that was the fact that you really need to record yourself and watch as many times as possible what you're doing, what are you saying, are you involving the audience, are the audience falling asleep to your talk. And the one advice that I did not receive from anyone, I think the only person that I received it from was my mother, and it was just take care of yourself, sleep, eat, and then prepare for your presentation. Don't try to make it the best till the very last minute in the expense of your sleep, because that will make your immune system fall apart and you'll be very, very weak because of the stress. And for example, on my first international talk, I was very, very scared, and everything was at the expense of my sleep. And during my talk, I was with the highest fever because I got so sick the night before my talk. And it was all just because I didn't take enough care of myself. So take care of your presentation, be aware of your mistakes, but also don't forget to take care of yourself, because if you don't do that, everything else just goes to the trash and it doesn't matter.
Great advice. Be healthy before you nail your presentation. So the final topic I wanted to talk to you about is women in tech. I know we spoke about it briefly before, and you said that there are some interesting things from your perspective that you wanted to talk about. Sadly, the industry, like design and tech, is male dominant. So how did you experience like stepping into a world that is mostly men? Like your first experiences?
It was very scary. My first experience was to be surrounded by very angry men who yell at me on a daily basis and just be dominant around me. I think at Falcon we're doing much great. We have, it's still male dominant, but the culture is much better and there is a high tolerance for women. We're still, I don't think in general anyone in Europe, I'm not completely sure about the United States or so, I don't think that they're doing much better than us, but I don't think anyone in general is doing great at having women in leadership positions, and it's good. And unfortunately, I never had to mentor anyone who is going through the same things that I did. But I see more and more women just being part of this industry. And that's scary. Yeah.
So if you would mentor like a young girl getting into design now, what kind of advice would you give her?
Be humble. It takes time and it takes a lot of patience. Feedback is not a bad thing. You shouldn't be scared of feedback, and you just in general shouldn't be scared, because everything will fall into place. But just be aware of your surroundings and be aware of what you're lacking of, because in general there will always be someone who is better than you. So do what you're doing, but make sure you're doing it right.
Is this for you an extra motivation to get into design leadership, because you want to be that person that maybe other girls can look up to when they see a male dominant world?
Not necessarily. I don't want to be seen as this design lead that is also a woman, because this is just, to me, leadership is not a job title. It's definitely a choice. And if you choose to go into that direction, you should be aware that there is a high difference between leadership and management, and in general those things are very, very usually taken as synonyms or just the same thing, and that's bad. So if you choose to be a woman and within a leadership position, you should be aware of what you should take care of. I think there are a few studies that actually refer to the fact that women are better at being leaders because they're more open and more aware, while men are just go back to their previous experiences and not learn from it a lot. But honestly, this is from research. I've been through it. I think the last talk that I gave was just about that, like women and leadership and their biases about that. So there is significant data on that subject. But in general, just being a woman within the IT industry and within a leadership position is hard.
Yeah. And is that something, now that you speak of leadership, that you've learned throughout your career, what kind of leader you want to be and what kind of leader you don't want to be? Like, is that something that your experience have shaped you?
Yeah, I have plenty of examples of bad leaders. I also have examples of good leaders. For example, right now at Falcon, I'm completely happy with the management team and the design leadership team as a whole. I see a lot of good and great things that they're doing. In the past, I didn't always have that example. I used to mentor just a few people, a few interns, a few junior designers, a few mid designers. So there is a certain amount of responsibility and leadership that comes within that. I also had this position for, like, I think it was around 3 or 4 months as head of design, which really didn't give me a lot because the company was just this chaotic startup. But in general, my understandings of leadership are shaped by seeing the bad examples and learning from them. And now that I also have the great examples, I know what else can be done or what else I need to work on until I can say to myself that I'm completely ready to pursue a direction like that.
So for our final two questions, one is regarding our Designers FM playlist on Spotify. I will make sure that this time the link is actually mentioned in the description so people can also have a listen. So we would love to know, what kind of music do you listen to designing? And then final question is, what one song do you want to add to the playlist?
I usually listen to alternative rock or just anything that's chill, because when I am designing, I don't want to be distracted. I usually go for chill beats or something that's just very pleasant to listen to. So no hard rock, just alternative and indie sounds. I think I can recommend a song called Swamp by a guy called Futuro Pelo.
Awesome. We'll add it to the playlist. And it will also be kind of the intro tune to the podcast. So your entrance song, if we want to call it like that. Final question. Like your story, I love to hear other stories from designers. Who do you think we should get on the show? And can you introduce me to them?
I immediately think of someone who used to be a colleague of mine at university. He's also from Eastern Europe. His name is Horia Veselin. We met in Denmark. He's like me. He is a designer like me, traveled to a lot of places because of his design career. He's a great, great illustrator and has lots of experience in building products. And I'm sure he'll be very, very interesting and helpful to hear.
Thank you. I will definitely send him a message and try to get him on the podcast for a future episode. Thank you for your time. Hopefully the corona situation is going a little bit over so you can enjoy working at the office while I'll enjoy working from home. Thank you for your time. We'll speak another time. And for the listeners, till next time. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us this week on the Designers FM show. Make sure to visit our website, designers.fm, where you will find wonderful material and links to all our shows on all the different platforms, so you'll never miss a show. While you're at it, if you like the show, please leave a review on iTunes or just tell a friend about us. We would be extremely thankful. That's all for now. I'm your host, David, and this class is dismissed.